The meeting for the audit committee for February 7th, and thank you for being here. I'm going to open a work session and actions on completed audits, and I will ask our staff to start with a introduction of what we've got here and what this vote actually means today.
Great.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, as you may recall, because we've only done one of these, so we're in a new process. LFO as staff to the audit committee is now doing an audit analysis for the committee on the audits that are presented here, the performance audits that are presented here. You're going to see that the format is fairly similar to what you would see for an emergency board item, something of that nature, but the bottom line is we do want to recap the recommendations of the audit, note the agency responses in a general sense, and then do an analysis and a recommendation for you. So your vote here is actually then, what happens with that after you vote is, if, for example, in this audit, we basically say the things that are identified as actions we agree with, and we will then be tracking those and, in fact, give some indication of whether or not we think that's something that the policy committee should discuss, whether it's something that Ways and Means should discuss in the future, or whether it's something we just expect that the executive branch will complete. And we have asked the agencies, you'll see that in the recommendation, to notify us when that work is complete or if something changes in that work. And we do try to let you know if we think that something might change. So with that, the first one we're going to hear today, and you have, if you recall, you have heard from the Secretary of State on this audit, as well as the agency, regarding the Oregon Health Authority and detection and prevention of improper Medicaid payments. We did note a number of things in the analysis, which includes the fact that the legislature did take some action. Of course, a lot of times with audits, you have actions happening at the same time that audits are happening. And in 2017-19, in the long session, there was a package approved for the detection, prevention, investigation of fraud, waste, and abuse in the agency. And that one is moving forward, and it includes funding for some data changes that should help deal with that. The one thing we did want to point out in the analysis is there is a real challenge for the agency in that the budget assumes that the package will generate $17 million in state revenues during the biennium. Some of that is, in effect, helping to fund the package. We are still...
Ms. McHugh, Madam Chair.
Yes.
What's the accuracy quotient on that estimate? Too often in this building, I have seen wild projections of anticipatory revenue, only to be sorely disappointed. So what's the confidence ratio?
Madam Chair, Co-Chair Johnson, I'm not sure I would put it in the category of wildly optimistic, but I think it is certainly something that that is questionable whether or not we're going to achieve that. But the agency is working with that, and our staff in LFO is monitoring that as well. So it will be noted. If that doesn't do what was anticipated, that we will be aware of that.
Follow up. Yes. I have not had an opportunity to discuss this with my co-chair, the professional staff, but it is those sorts of things that I would respectfully ask be noted and tracked. Because a variety of reasons. First of all, I want agencies to believe that when they make estimates, somebody's paying attention. And I'd like to track over time about how often they miss the mark. I don't care what agency it is. Also, if we are funding ongoing work, or the expectation is that ongoing work will be funded with that, I don't want to get more than 50% down the trail on the ongoing work and all of a sudden we're out of money and it's an expectation that the general fund or some other source of funds will ride to the rescue. So I think that that ought to be a function of this committee. It ought to be something the legislature pays attention to, because ultimately if there's a screw up, we end up holding the bag. So I would respectfully ask that this be the kind of thing that is always added to a monitoring status board or score sheet or however we're going to track this stuff, tracking system.
Okay. I might add, if there's not another question at this point, that sometimes they have a range because it is, and you know, it's a forecast, and so sometimes there's a range. And I think that when you've got a high-low approximate amount, that seems to give you a better idea of how to function, you know, session by session or biennium by biennium. So you might want to keep the difference between a single number and a range number.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm not silly enough to say it has to be $1,254,320.
Well, yes,
but I also want to know that if it is a range and it is wildly missed, mm-hmm. that's important information for the legislature to have. And we could differ on the definition of wildly, but when we are the ultimate bag holder, I want to know what the scope of the problem is and track it.
So I do want Senator Johnson to know I was supporting you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Sometimes she doesn't even take yes for an answer.
Okay. I think we have just one more question here. So, oh. Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, Co-Chair. My question is to Mrs. McHugh. Did LFO look at the 9 positions that they need to do this? And the second thing is, so back to your discussion on how much revenue it's going to generate, they said your paper says it's going to generate an additional $15 million for general budget use. Why? I mean...
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Wisnant. Yes, in fact, this was this package and this discussion actually took up a considerable amount of time in the Human Resources Subcommittee during the last session. So this was developed in connection with the agency budget and with LFO. In terms of the assumptions about the revenues, again, if this is done, it's the idea is that you're going to detect where there's money that didn't need to be spent, as the audit was focused on. Where is there money that was either through fraud or just actually people that timing that people shouldn't have been on the caseload and still were, that there will be savings in the budget in effect, and that was the estimate of potentially with that those 9 positions that you can generate that much money, and again. The funds then, $2.1 million of that 17 was used to fund the package and the positions. The remainder then becomes available for general budget use.
Can I follow up, Madam Co-Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm a citizen, taxpaying citizen. So this agency screwed up, right? And we're rewarding them by giving them 9 additional people to do the job that we thought they were already staffed for. I mean, And is it, you know, is this a catch-up? You know, is it limited positions? They're full-time positions forever. They're going to have 9 more positions on PERS and benefits and all that for forever.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wisnant, I think, and again, if you go back to the audit, I think there was less of being concerned about screw-up as there was about there were a lot of changing regulations and a lot of things were occurring.
I probably should not have used that word.
Led to that. But it'd be similar to when you have a discussion with the Department of Revenue about the number of auditors, that auditors, up to a point, auditors will generate more funds because there are just people out there who are either going to, through lack of understanding or through fraud, try to access funds that they aren't necessarily entitled to. And so that if you have people that are doing that job, you can help those who shouldn't be on as well and need assistance, but maybe that's not they're not eligible, as well as those that are trying to defraud the system. So I think that's the balance. And again, the agency did not come forward and say we need 100 new positions, trying to find that balance. But if we want to have a broader discussion for the committee, I would add, I'm touching the basics of what I know about it. We could certainly have the agency discuss it further with us or the legislative fiscal analyst. But I will tell you there was a very, there was a large discussion around this with the subcommittee and what is the right number and how does this work.
The other element that I think should be on the record today as we discuss this is the fact that we talked about the fact that when you are looking for eligibility of a person once a year, that's one issue. When you are looking at the eligibility of somebody all the time because their conditions change, that's another issue. And so I agree with the staff that we did have some of that conversation, and I know I looked at some of those meetings when those discussions were going on what is the appropriate level for the type of eligibility that we're trying to review. And so I think that we continue those conversations. One of the things I also feel that staff has pointed out up to this point, and I'm interrupting you, I know, is that we're trying to make sure we're keeping track so we have a better understanding in the future of exactly that. You know, what the changes were that were made, what were the staffing changes that were made, you know, how is the result showing us, you know, some forward movement on trying to keep up with this ongoing forever eligibility swirl. And so I appreciate the comments that staff made. Now, please finish if you had something else that you wanted to.
The only other thing we really want to focus on is that there were some of the recommendations that may require additional funding beyond what was included in the budget for the agency. And as always, we like to note that those changes should be part of legislative budget discussions because they really need to be weighed in the context of other needs. Obviously, this is a large agency with a lot of competing priorities, and making sure those discussions happen in that forum.
So at this point, since we haven't really done this very often, so this is the first area where we've made recommendations. This is the first finished audit that we've made.
Second one.
And so at this point, I would take a motion that would accept the recommendations that have been made by. Is that the kind of motion you want us to make?
Correct. Well, Ms. McHugh, are you going to put a formal LFO recommendation onto the record that then the chair could accept a motion for the LFO recommendation?
LFO recommends acknowledging receipt of the report and consider findings and agency responses during the 2019 session, including ensuring that agency practices comply with laws, rules, and policies.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I am sorry. Let me go back to... I am on the wrong audit. So I want to be on the right audit here. Okay, let me get back and make sure. I was just realizing, I'm going, wait a minute, I don't think that part is part of this one. Excuse me. LFO recommends acknowledging receipt of the report and consider findings and agency responses during the 2019 session.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, for the purpose of discussion, I would move the LFO recommendation. One of the things that I don't know whether or not the committee, as we begin to establish a pattern of practice, whether or not there is any opportunity at this point for the agency to comment on the record, or is there a comment with staff and with the professional staff at Secretary of State sufficient? I don't know whether or not, as a courtesy, you afford them the opportunity to make a comment on the record. I'm the newbie, so I don't know what the practice of the committee has been up to this point.
I think that's a discussion that we should have, you know, right now, because it does relate to this motion.
Madam Chair, if I could respectfully ask that the agency do be allowed, if for no other reason than it is my experience in this building that sometimes silence indicates acquiescence, and then we hear about hall conversations later. So I would very much like to have the agency on the record. Anything that they would like to have made part of the conversation, it should be on the record.
Madam Chair, Co-Chair Johnson, I should note that our process so far, and you weren't here for that hearing, so I think the agency is able to maybe make a statement, but both the Secretary of State and the agency did present before the committee. Mm-hmm. At that time, this was already a meeting material, and they were aware of the recommendations. So at this point, that has been when they've had their opportunity to say whether they agree or disagree. If that process wants to be changed and we come and discuss the LFO recommendation prior to the presentation or in between the Secretary of State and the agency, whatever is the pleasure of the committee, that can certainly be done. But the agency and Secretary of State did present on.
And so there have not been material changes since the presentation, no editing, no subsequent revisions?
There has not.
No.
Okay.
Senator Thatcher.
So just to make it clear, we have a motion to accept or acknowledge receipt of the LFO report. Okay, thank
you. That was my
motion. Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Do we want to amend the Co-Chair's, Johnson's amendment or motion and include something about report back to this committee on how much money actually saves or something? Do you want to add that to the
I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Is everybody okay with that? Any objection?
If they come back in a year to this committee or advise how much money was generated or something, or
I think there may be certain audits that we have, you know, that type of a direction that might be appropriate, but maybe not for all. So I think we can do more than just accept.
So I propose the friendly amendment.
Okay. And any objections on that friendly amendment? Seeing none, that'll be part of the motion. Okay. So all of those in favor of this motion to accept, would you please say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and everybody else is not here, so they don't get the vote today. All right, so that passes. And so now let's go on to our number two.
All right. So the next audit is the audit on the Higher Education Coordinating Commission on Procurement Practices, excuse me. The Secretary of State and agency were here and discussed this audit. Again, the agency agreed with the audit recommendations and has begun work on implementing those recommendations. They have a pretty healthy timeline on when they say they're going to get that work all done. And again, we had a broader discussion yesterday of many of the issues that you would see in this analysis, which have to do with this being a very young agency and bringing together some small agencies that once they were all together with larger responsibilities actually triggered their need for different services and different administrative functions than existed within that agency, which led to some of the issues that I think were found in this procurement audit that in fact were non-compliant with state laws. Again, some of the issues there are going to may require additional funding beyond what was included for the agency. And again, LFO does formally recommend that DAS consider establishing a process or tools to assist agencies during major organizational changes such as this one, and that they also have a follow-up procedure for those to ensure that they're complying with all statewide administrative laws and practices. So that is part of the LFO recommendation that we would ask them to do that, and then obviously they would need to let us know if they are going to consider that or not. And again, once again, as with the other the last audit, we do note that the discussions requiring the need for additional funding need to be made in the context of the full budget discussion. And with that, again, we recommend acknowledging receipt of the audit report.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation for the purpose of discussion because I have discussion.
Mm-hmm. So would you like to start?
Yes. I have to say on the record, I was pretty disappointed in the conversation that we had at the last meeting with respect to the role of DAS. Maybe I've been around so long that I remember when DAS had fangs, and DAS was the mother of all agencies. It was there to dictate process and procedure to other agencies. And I believe over time that there's been either a shift in policy or DAS is abrogating that role. But I didn't feel as though we had gotten the kind of answer from DAS that gave me a sense of encouragement that we were going to learn from this audit and do something differently. I agree with the substance of the LFO report, but I was pretty disappointed in the conversation. And I don't think questions were answered. I think that it was somewhat patronizing, to be honest. Ms. Koba was the one that opened the door about which agencies were on their watch list, and I asked for that list and was dismissed, and I am asking on the record now for that list. And so I just felt compelled to make that comment. It does not deter me from supporting the LFO recommendation with respect to the audit. But I think that the legislature should engage in a broader discussion about what our expectations of DAS are in terms of preventing this from happening again.
Any other questions or comments or discussion? Yes, Representative Whitson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Since I won't be around to follow up on some of this stuff, I'd like to put on the record that the paragraph, second paragraph in recommendations about DAS doing this and doing that, I still strongly believe that DAS should really look at who has contract responsibility and see where that can be centralized, consolidated, or whatever. I think there's some And I work with the HEC in my subcommittee and on the ways and means process, and I think they do a good job. They are recently new, but I'm not sure that we should have DAS couldn't pick up that responsibility. But so my suggestion is that that we won't add it to the language, but just hope that DAS will continue to look at centralizing versus delegating contract responsibility throughout the state government, and that they consolidate and try to save manpower and dollars where they can by consolidating. Thank you.
Yes, please.
Just a little information from a committee hearing yesterday in government accountability. We did have a presentation from the governor's office about a new procurement system that they're looking into, which would is very interesting, would save money and would be statewide. Right now it's ORPIN, mm-hmm. That's the contracting website, but you can't do any transactions through it. You just get information off of it. And this type of system would be, they termed as a reverse eBay, where people who want to sell something to the state, they bid, say, we'll do it for this, and other people say, well, we'll do it for this. And so they'll take into consideration price, but also other factors. But it sounds like where it has been used, it has saved a lot of money. So just adding to that what you're saying, Representative Wisnett.
I would like to add my thoughts that really support both, actually, what all three of you have said already, and that is that I think the public expects us to have a government that continues to try to improve, be transparent, and be efficient. And I think that what Senator Johnson said about DAS being a support and also a leader and someone who's actually going to give some, not just best practices, but also some direction when they see something that can be done better, or there's some training that needs to be done so people can have the best possible productivity that they can in those jobs. And contracting is another example. But I hope that we have in this recommendation, I think by this vote, that we are asking DAS to look at that. We are asking that they really try to figure out where there are more places where we can make sure that we are helping agencies, supporting agencies, and our staff in all areas to make sure we're doing it in the most efficient way, most effective way. Sometimes that, even if there are differences in agencies, there still are ways to get that efficiency out of the kind of training or the kind of work that we do on contracting and many other elements. So thank you for those comments today. So at this time, those in favor of this motion will say aye.
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 And it was unanimous, and we'll start this routine now. Those are the first three that we have actually had some review, some analysis, and some direction that we're trying to make sure that we continue to use these audits, which cost money and are time-consuming, but we're trying to prioritize those audits, work with the Secretary of State's office on those audits, and make sure that we get some work done after we look at the advice of those audits. So thank you very much. So at this time, we'll go on to the next issue on our agenda, and we are looking at an update on the audit on the Department of Revenue. And please bring up your panel, and we look forward to this update.
Oh, whoa.
Oh my gosh.
Are you okay?
I've done that.
That is dangerous.
I have done that.
Oh my gosh.
Is there a tissue on the desk in case you need it?
Okay, Andrew.
Thank goodness he had glasses, actually.
Thank you.
I broke the ice. Anyway.
No, I didn't. It just brushed the glasses.
Okay. Yeah, getting your eye poked out, not cool.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, as we'll turn this over to Secretary of State to give an update. I do want to give a little context, though, making sure we understand, because there's a lot going on with the Department of Revenue, and some of you serve on other committees that are hearing about other audits as well. And again, out of the last session, a number of issues were raised. There are, I believe, 9 budget notes in the Department of Revenue budget report, and some of those call for other external audits as well. You will recall that this committee asked the Secretary of State to consider doing an audit specifically really on agency, internal kind of agency management, customer service and quality issues. Those are typically known as a culture audit. So this is one piece of all the audits. So I think we're going to be talking about that element today, but I wanted you to, if you're saying, well, what's happening to this other external financial audit, that's really not part of this one. It wasn't, and wasn't requested by this committee. This is the piece that was specifically requested by JLAC.
Madam Chair, could I ask Ms. McHugh to repeat that for just a second? Because I get myself all tangled up in what a definition of a culture audit was.
Okay.
And if you could help me, I loved what you said. I just didn't, you said it so quickly, I couldn't absorb it.
Madam Chair, Co-Chair Johnson, I do talk too fast. That's problem one. But and I think the Secretary of State can give you more information on a culture audit. But that is now a term that is used for a specific kind of audit that we used to call kind of the tone at the top audit, because I am old and remember those audits, and really is more about internal management, how, you know, are employees doing what employees should be doing? Are they getting the support they need? How is that affecting customer service? Mm-hmm. How is it affecting internal quality controls? All of those kinds of things. That's the general definition that matched up with what the committee did. Not ask for a culture audit. The committee asked for an audit on those items. Mm-hmm. The Secretary of State has informed us that the term that is generally used for that is culture audit, and I think they will give us a little more definition of that as well.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Will Garber. I'm deputy director at the Secretary of State Audits Division. With me here is Andrew, who I think survived his approach to the table, but he's an audit manager at the Audits Division, and he has responsibility for the audit we'll be talking about today. So happy to be here to give you a brief update on our audit at the Department of Revenue. And we don't really have results we can report at this time. We're not at that point in the audit yet, but we can tell you a little bit about what our objectives and methodology will be for the audit and some time frames for when we'll think we'll have those done. So let me just start, if I could, with a sort of a high-level statement of what the objectives for the audit will be, and then and time frames, and then I'll turn it over to Andrew because I think he can give you a little bit more detail on what we're talking about in terms of the approach for the audit. So we've got two basic objectives for this audit. One is around customer service, and it's really getting at how the agency collects and analyzes and reports customer service information. The second objective is the one we've been referring to so far. It's really an assessment of DOR's organizational culture. We had a brief discussion about this, I think, a couple hearings ago. Andrew will get into a little bit more detail about what we have in mind for that. But I just wanted to mention this term we've been giving it. We've been calling it a culture audit. It is a performance audit. It is a type of performance audit, or it's a performance audit that will have an objective focused on culture. We'll follow all of our normal audit processes. We'll follow government auditing standards. So it's not something brand new for us in terms of process. It's a little bit new in terms of the subject matter, but not the process we'll be following. In terms of reporting, those two objectives I mentioned, they're on two different tracks. The customer service objective, we're really just getting into our reporting phase on that now, and we'll be able to issue a brief interim report on that audit, or that objective rather, next month or the month after that. So we thought it was important to go ahead and get that information out. It's more timely rather than waiting until the completion of the entire engagement. The second objective, the one on culture, that one will take a little bit longer. We're just now moving into the planning phase for that one. Just moving into the fieldwork phase for that one. We expect to get a report out in the summer, tentatively in August timeframe.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Two comments, and I'm going to jump way up to 100,000 feet. The question I've got is, DOR is an agency that's struggling right now. They are under scrutiny from the governor's office, scrutiny in a performance plan. They got 9 budget notes from the legislature. They've got multiple audits going on. They're preparing for the 2018 tax term. I'm just wondering, and I'm very supportive of all of this. I think that is a troubled agency. But I'm wondering, when the scrutiny overwhelms the doing of the day-to-day business, and that may be a somewhat rhetorical question, but it's one that I think we as a legislature ought to keep in mind when we are asking them to dig into their processes and procedures to a point that they may be taking their ball off the their eye off the ball of the principal mission, which is go get the money. So I don't necessarily need a response from you. I'm just sort of airing that as a concern. The second thing on the customer audit, which was new to me, and DAS struggled to try to explain what that was in another subcommittee, but you talked about how they collect, analyze, and report the data. In this instance, there's a piece that's missing for me, and I'm about to stray heavily over into operations, but I at least just want to lift it up. The Department of Revenue has a remarkable ability, even as collateral damage, to significantly affect Oregonians. And if there is a mistake, I'm trying to find that place where in the customer service rubric, it is redressed to the satisfaction of the Oregonian. I have had constituents call me, and an error committed at the Department of Revenue has resulted in their credit being trashed. And I'm trying to figure out, it's lovely to collect, analyze, and report, but what degree of requirement for closure is there if there has been an agency mistake, so that at least the aggrieved Oregonian has a piece of paper with state letterhead on it that says, we, the state, were wrong, not you, the taxpayer. And again, I've drifted heavily into operations, but given the unique power and authority of DOR and the fact that they connect with virtually every Oregonian and they have had as many problems as they've had, I just offer that up for your consideration.
Okay. Co-Chair Johnson, thank you for that comment. Without getting into too much detail again, because these are ongoing audits and we really haven't gotten into where we have findings to report yet, I think the issue with customer service for us, we are aware of some concern about a dip in customer service performance measures. I think what our goal, at least in part, what our goal for the customer service piece is to get behind that data and try and figure out what's behind that dip.
So I think what I just heard you say to the answer of that question is that something that Senator Johnson just mentioned, which is we want a full circle of, you know, to make sure that you're figuring out from the data, you know, what are some places, right, mm-hmm. where there might be some more improvements that could be made in that service. Mm-hmm. And so you're suggesting that once you get that data that you are going to review that and make some suggestions like the one that Senator Johnson mentioned?
I'd like to jump in. Yeah. For the record, my name is Andrew Love. I'm the audit manager for this engagement. Part of our work we do survey and planning, and part of that is to gain the understanding of the agency and also gain understanding of the risk and the problems. The team initially took a deep dive into the KPMs, and I think there are some challenges with how that information is reported. The reason we're going to go with an interim report is that we think we would be able to add some value to some context of what happened during that period, mm-hmm. and what things went wrong and what went well, and what recommendations we can have so they can both improve their evaluation efforts, but also some of that customer service piece. We didn't go into a deep dive into individual customer service efforts, probably because at that high level, there were some challenges with the data where it would be difficult to really dive deep into whether they're effective in that customer service piece.
Senator Johnson.
Let me just share with you, you probably already know this, but I would say a good place for some original data collection would be the governor's Ombudsman's office, mm-hmm. Because I know that all of us were being called regularly, and this was about the advent of the new computer. It was about simultaneous to the advent of the new computer system coming online. So I'm going to guess that there were some technical issues that resulted in incomplete or erroneous customer relationships. But I'm going to assume, as mad as some of my constituents were, that they weren't stopping at my office, but they were continuing up the food chain to the governor's office, and that might be the source of some data points.
Thank you. We'll definitely look into that. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think that pretty good place for me to stop and turn it over to Andrew so we can give you a little bit more detail on how we're going to approach the two audits, and then we're happy to try and answer any other questions you'd have.
Great. Well, is there any other question co-chairs and members of the committee. Are there any other questions about that customer service piece? At this point, we can't report the results, but like I said, we do intend to provide some context around what happened during that period and how they can improve. We'd be happy to come back and speak with you once that interim report is out, and we can get into more details of what we found then.
I guess the only, I just want to make it clear that I thought that Senator Johnson also just gave you a really good source to get some more data that will make the data more complete. We want the data to be complete on the full cycle of it. It's not just what was happening there in that agency at that time, or just the new computer model that we were using, or the new computer program or software. But we want you to really look at some of the information from complaints and some of the information from citizens that actually felt that dealing with this agency was difficult. Mm-hmm. And not only difficult, but that sometimes they didn't get, they didn't get an apology when something wasn't their problem or their fault. So I think that's part of what we're hoping that you're auditing.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, we are going to be looking at the full picture, and that's a little bit about what we're talking about, the context.
Okay.
Because when you look at the KPMs, the numbers shift widely, and we want to add a little more context to what happened. And we definitely aren't far enough along that we can't go back and look at some of those suggestions, so we will be looking into some of the things that you offered. Thank you.
Sure. Yes, we, co-chairs, will, we can tap into the Ombudsman's office as well for that information.
Any other, I don't think there are any other questions at this time.
Okay, on to culture. So like I mentioned, the team has finished the survey and planning piece, and part of that work, like I mentioned, on customer service, also on the organizational cultures, they met with some stakeholders, they met with staff, they looked through policies and procedures. And at this time, like we said, we're going to focus on this idea of organizational culture. We're going to do something a little different than we usually do. Generally, in audits, you find we find problems, and we have the cause, and the cause gets to this nebulous thing called culture, and we ask them to fix their culture in various different ways. A little bit, what we look at is really talking about kind of some of the symptoms of the culture, not really getting at what the culture is. So the team did a lot of research, and they found an internationally renowned tool for assessing culture. The idea behind that is we plan to issue a survey that goes to both the employment and management team, and we'll get information back from that. So the I want to be clear that our...
May I stop and ask a question?
Yes, definitely.
I am very curious about the tool, because I presume you are assuring anonymity. I don't know whether or not when you're taking the temperature of the agency that you're saying to the very people who may be the aggrieved or the cranky folks, be sure to put your name on the bottom of this so we can come back and get you later. I mean, I don't know how that works. And I'm curious to know what the survey tool is and what you think will be a response, your expectation of a response, a percentage that would be credible of people that are responding, and whether or not the agency, which has been under the spotlight right now, is in a position where employees feel as though they can accept and respond to a tool.
I don't have the specific details in terms of how, what our expected response rate, and our team is really trying to work through that. We have a high-level development plan, but I can tell you a little bit about the tool. The tool, a survey gives the opportunity for people to kind of vote on the different value statements, what they believe that the agency has. It's not a tool where you can report grievances. There's no open-ended questions. Basically, based on this tool, it will classify what the survey respondent thinks the current culture is versus what the desired state is. And so what I want to be clear on, we're not, our intention is not to identify the perfect culture for the organization. Rather, what we are planning to do and what we think is the meat of this is to identify where that gap is. How big is that gap from the current state to what both the employees and management team would like it to look like? And then we will go in, do some interviews and some focus groups to identify what are the roadblocks that get in the way from you being the organization that you wish it would be. There's a lot of research out there that says when the employees and the organizations or cultures are in line, that the organization can operate at a high level. And so our intent is to get through those. And So what we hope to find and is to figure out what are those policies and their those strategic planning decisions. What about how decisions are made? What about how staffing decisions are made? What are the things that happen internally that has created this particular divide and tension between what the employees and management would like to be versus where they are? And so in that process, we hope to work with the agency to dive deep into some of those root causes and not really, we do want to recognize if those high-level systemic issues of resources. And so if there's audit-grade evidence out there that says they need more resources, we will highlight that. However, our intention is not to stop there. We want to start get down deeper into look into some of those internal processes that they can improve, because we want to give them kind of a roadmap so how they can be a more high performing organization. We plan to work with the management team and the employees. That's one of the main focus of that focus group piece, is to kind of sit together and try to get some new ideas of how would you like this to look? What are some of the things that kind of prevent you from working at a high level? And then ultimately we'll have a list of recommendations that we think will get them to the place where we would like them to be.
Has the management team settled enough? They have a new director, and I just didn't know whether or not enough time had passed. The new director undoubtedly may make some personnel changes, may make additions or corrections to the management team. Is it adequately settled to do this kind of review?
It's a good question, co-chairs, members of the committee. Thank you for that question. I think it's a good time for them, and I think they're really receptive to this. We met with them recently, and they were really excited about the information that they're getting. I think this will help the new director get a kind of a pulse on what are some of those underlying issues within the organization. The survey tool, back to the survey tool, the information, the individuals will be able to submit a survey, and it will go to an international company. So it doesn't live with us, and it doesn't live with Department of Revenue. So there's a level of anonymity to that. Of course, we're a public organization, so we'll have to kind of look into how do we handle that issue. But the idea would be is that it can take the information, do like deep dives by cross-section of like what is the collections unit's culture versus what we would like it to be? What is these different units? And so they seemed really receptive and really excited about this. And it will help kind of set a baseline of kind of what are some of the expectations and ways that they can improve. So I think it's a really good time for it. But that's just my opinion.
One other question, perhaps to the professional staff. I'm just trying to figure out, and I know a fair amount about DOR because I sit on a subcommittee that has dealt with them for a long time. But I'm wondering, listening to you talk, sort of where we go from here. You've got the Department of Revenue in kind of intensive care triage right now. And I'm just wondering, depending on what your audit findings are, whether or not there's a role for the Legislative Policy Office. There may be issues that are so systemic that a more in-depth study outside of the strictures of normally accepted auditing practices. But what I'm really asking in a larger context of Ms. McHugh is, do you foresee a time when there could be a finding that was sufficiently complex that you might actually ask LPRO to take it on as a case study or some additional review?
Madam Co-Chair and Co-Chair Johnson, yes. The short answer is yes. In discussions with both the legislative fiscal officer and the co-chairs, Co-Chair McLean and then the previous co-chair, Co-Chair Devlin, I think we've had that discussion of in certain cases there may be items that that LPRO is asked to consider. And for example, whether it be from this committee or others, for example, if you recall Senate Bill 1067, which was the cost containment measure, had a piece regarding procurement and basically left open. At that point, we did not have a final audit plan from the Secretary of State. This committee and 1067 had said we really need to look at procurement. And if the Secretary of State does not do that kind of an audit in the next couple of years, LPRO may do that audit. I think LPRO is in the process right now of scoping what kind of review could they do. Again, they can't do an audit. They don't have auditors, but they could do a review of procurement, and I believe they're in the process right now of looking at how what that might look like. So clearly that is a role we can play if there's a review that doesn't really fit into the audit plan or the structure of an audit. Can't be accomplished within the time I work for the committee and needs more staff assistance.
Thank you.
Thank you. You may continue.
Oh, I think I may have wrapped up my portion, but at this time I can answer any questions you have about our methodology.
I think we heard pretty much where you're going, and we look forward to next month when you may have something to report out specifically on the information that you've looked at. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else? All right. Welcome.
Thank you.
And please just let the panel go forward and say your name for the record.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kip Mamet. I'm the Audit Director for the Secretary of State's Office. Great to be here with you guys today.
Madam Co-Chair, to kind of lead this one off, the committee requested Mr. Mamet and staff be here to have a discussion with the committee about the auditing of state agency performance measures. The statutes actually give authority around the measures to JLAC to review those measures and to determine are they appropriate, et cetera. Now, that responsibility has largely been really part of the Ways and Means process when this committee wasn't functioning, and because of the connection to those approvals about how agency, what funding is appropriate for that. In that process, there's been some discussion around those measures in terms of the data. So the measures get a lot of discussion with the subcommittees, and are they the appropriate measures or not? We have seen audits that actually look at those measures as they're looking at a program about whether they're appropriate or not. But there's also the question of the validity of the data, and should that data be periodically reviewed, or at least some kind of sampling of performance measure data to determine if it's accurate and valid. Again, that process does not is not always very amenable to the Ways and Means process to be able to really go in and validate all that data. So with that, we asked Mr. Mamet to have that discussion with the committee and to talk about his experience previously and how the audits division looks at performance measure data and what might make sense going forward.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, co-chairs, for the opportunity and members of the committee. This is a topic that auditors get really excited and wonked out on, right? Because performance audits, a little known secret, are only as good as the data we can audit. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing a lot of audits coming out where we lack data to really get deeper into an analysis. So we just selfishly want good performance metrics, and I just want to put out that we already have some metrics for ourselves, but we're going to be enhancing our own metrics and reporting them out as well on how the Secretary of State's Audits Division is, you know, our value add and what we're doing and our metrics as well, and that's a big part of me too. And so this is personal to us. But as you guys know, there's basically three, outside of auditors, there's two key constituents. That use these performance metrics or theoretically use them to good use, and that is the agencies themselves. They should be designing these to help them direct internal operations, to stretch goals, things like that, and to measure performance, right? But then there's the external entities, including the legislature, who need this information to make funding and other decisions. And so I think they're very important that you have them. And I guess there's the other external stakeholders, the public. Mm-hmm. You know, public budgets I've always looked at are the document. I'm not under any delusion that a lot of citizens are reading them before they go to bed, but they are a public trust document where you are telling to the citizens what you're going to do with their money and what you did do with their money. And so those measures are important. And so there's kind of a couple things to think about in that regard. And I do have quite a bit of experience, as our team does, in auditing these. One is, and these are obvious, so I apologize for stating the obvious, one is, are they any good? Do these metrics really get to the effectiveness? Are they linked to strategy? Are they meaningful? And so those are the squishier areas. There's, especially with some of the service delivery models and things we do with the state, very complicated. As you know, there's different kinds of measures, input, output, outcome, all of that kind of stuff. So there's a variety you can use there. There's not one necessarily better than the other, but we really look at outcomes. What really, not compliance that we checked all the boxes, but what are checking all those boxes mean to the public, to the citizen? So are they any good? And then if they are good, are they supported? Are they accurate? Is there data to actually support them? And so those are the two things an audit would look at, is, and I guess that's pretty basic, but what I found in my experience is often, and I'm generalizing here, neither of those hold true. And I think that's really important, where often what I've seen in my experience is it's more of a budget requirement, and that people are doing it more, and also, you know, they might not even go into the specific metrics that are really at the core of their operations. And I'm generalizing here, but for example, I think I put out to this committee before, I came from the city and county of Denver, Colorado, before here, and they are a pretty forward-leaning organization. We did two audits, and I can make these audit reports available to the committee, absolutely will, if you're interested in some bedtime reading. But one was on the Budget and Management Office, and one was on what they call their Peak Academy. They have a Lean Six program that they actually train city employees on how to do leaning and efficiency kind of activities. And they report big cost savings. It's a very innovative thing. And we looked at that and generally had some good findings around it, some assurance. But we also found that some of their cost savings were not validated with actual data to say what they were doing. And we said, hey, look, you're on the right trend here. But again, let's get realistic on what the impact of this program is, and then do the cost of the program and benefit of things like that. So for me, what we do in every audit, and I think we're gonna highlight this a little bit more in audits going forward, but we do look at measures. In any program we go to, absolutely just reference the DOR measures, but we would do that for any performance audit we go in. That tells us where they think they are. That tells us what they think is important to be measured, and it's vetted through the legislative process, so that tells us what the legislature believes is important too. So we may not always opine on those. They might always not be the exact scope of the audit, but just know as a background and as a common practice, we just check those. But I want to be a little more explicit as we go forward, even if we don't audit all the way through to the bottom on those, you know, top to bottom, we at least give some kind of opinion on where we're at with those measures, perhaps in the introduction or background of the report.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
You just said that you came here from Denver, so as somebody who's been around here a while, I want to validate your observations. These KPMs, I think Representative Nathanson and I were here, perhaps Representative Wisnett, when we first started using KPMs as a tool, and I think we struggled. Sometimes we had so many KPMs, we were spending most of our time tracking the KPMs and kind of lost track of the bigger picture. I think we have been very lackadaisical in the discipline and the rigor that we put around the failure to meet the KPMs. It's sort of, well, you got a 32 for customer service, do better next time. There just, to my observation, has not been a correlation between the value measurement and any kind of action that follows for continuous failure to meet. There has been, in my observation, a somewhat arbitrary assignment of KPMs by the legislature, perhaps lacking in consultation to link with the strategy of the agency. There has been a tendency on the part of the agencies to want to jigger around the KPMs if they consistently miss the mark. It was, why don't we retool what we're measuring and then our numbers will go up. So while in the main I applaud this as a tool, I just suggest for your audit eagle eyes, and I say that with respect, that there's some history here and you might do well to visit with some of the seasoned folks, the professional staff, as well as some of the legislators that have been here a long time, to get some observations about the state of the art of KPMs. Good idea, still missing the mark of full maturity, in my opinion, for their review and implementation.
Co-Chair Johnson. Could have said it better. That reflects my experience as well. And you really hit on something that I was going to hit here, which is baselining. And I get how you want to get different measures, and sometimes that's appropriate, especially if you didn't do them right in the first place. But often it's just shifting business, changes, technology, all that stuff, it changes. But without having a baseline and changing your metrics, especially maybe one or two, but across the board, it just prevents that trend analysis ability, that tracking to see where we're going. And so I think the discipline around that is you want to get them right the first place, and then, as you suggested, Senator, keep them true, and have very good reasons for why you change them. I think, again, I want to be as cryptic as we have to be in our profession around the DOR audit, but I think there was a change of metrics there, and it did cause some issues there. And I'll stop there with that, but I think there was a shift of just how they were measuring some things that made things look a lot different. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't know if they would have looked the same with the same metrics.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Co-Chair Johnson, I agree. It was 2005 when we first started developing the performance measures, and that's the legislatures, I think, were involved more. I think we've gotten sort of complacent. We look at them. I don't think we spend the time we probably should in the Ways and Means process of looking at them and being sure that we're measuring, because that was the period of time we were saying outcome-based and performance measure and all those things, and we came up with that key performance measures. We do change them. LFO looks at them, and we do get some changes, but I would concur with the Senator that I think that this probably should, Ways and Means Subcommittee should spend more time really looking at them and analyzing them than we do. I think we sort of look at the money at the end and say, oh, yeah, here's the performance measures, and here's what LFO says needs to be changed. But it's good. You're looking at it, and I think the legislators and their subcommittee should look at what we're measuring and is it the right thing to measure and things like that. So it's been a long time.
I'm glad you put a date with it. I was thinking about a decade, but your calculation, I believe, is correct, and it's longer than a decade.
Co-chairs, Representative Wisnett, I agree with everything you're saying, and I do want to note that one thing about measures, there's a lot of them, so I think one thing we're going to be doing in an upcoming audit is really looking at the KPM process. And part of it is, right, I think most people are good-intended, they're trying to do the right thing, but often there's confusion about intent and instruction and even process around it. Mm-hmm. So the classic performance audit, looking at that, but we absolutely, we can't do them across the board, but we will sample on some of the probably larger agencies and see, again, you know, validate the measures, you know, from that three things. Are they good? From our research and best practices, are they accurate? And are they being used? That was another finding we had in the Denver audits was, hey, you're not using this budget office, or at least in a transparent way. You know, here's performance data that you're basing decisions on, but there's this black box that they don't reconcile. And so we said, I know there's a lot of nuance there, but more transparency around how you use agency performance data and outcomes, hopefully over a trend of time, to make really tough budgeting decisions. And so we're going to be doing that formally, but I offer our office any support to LFO and the groups over there in terms of methodology and looking at this, because this is something we want to continue to look at for decades to come.
Can I make one comment?
Please.
When you say, are they good, you know, that to me, that just pointed up something else, and that is that are they good to one representative or one senator might be different than are they good to an agency or to me. And, you know, the definitions, making sure that the right language, the definitions, even, you know, your definition of what is good, I really think that that's an issue, that we've got people using them, people creating them, and people then looking for, is it accurate? Well, it might be accurate for your definition, but not mine. And so, again, I think it's paying more detail, as you pointed out, on how they're built, what we're building, and then making sure everybody has the same understanding of them as they're discussing them and as they're using them. Yes, please. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. My first term was in 2007, so these had just been implemented. I, however, had been learning about and working with performance measurement or performance measurement generally for some time already. So I was pretty aware of the difference between activity measures, how many widgets did you make, versus performance, but did it make anything better? Did something improve? Maybe we made 1,000 widgets an hour and no one needed them anymore.
Exactly.
So I wanted to reflect on a few things that I've seen over the years. First of all, some of those measures, whether they're a little bit more like activity or a little bit more like performance, you can look at them and wonder, okay, we know the measure, it is an indicator, but it is it what you wanted to know? We have some in different agencies that relate to the time it takes us to do something. So it relates to whether an Oregonian is going to be satisfied with this service or this thing where they have to deal with government, like the time to process a land use or other type of permit, the time it takes to process an application to do something, for licensing. You want to be a contractor or a medical professional or something else. How long does it take to get this thing done? Speed is one thing, but getting it done right is another. Mm-hmm. And someone may want it done faster, and someone else may say, I'd rather it be done well because you just processed this thing that my neighbor over here wants to do, and now it has an impact on me, and you forgot to check this aspect that now has an adverse impact on me. Or did you accidentally approve someone who should not have been approved for something, and now some Oregonians might be adversely impacted because this person who received the permit too fast is actually not trained and skilled and qualified to do something. So speed is something, but what does that mean to be fast? The second thing I wanted to comment on is when KPMs are reviewed in the process, very often it comes at the very end of the process when the legislative fiscal analyst is giving us the last set of motions. Okay, now we're giving this much money to the agency and we're adopting their key performance measures either with no changes or we need to tweak this one a little bit. And by then, everyone is so exhausted, you just race through it. And sometimes someone has noticed something earlier in the phase and there's a little bit of attention, but it seems like usually people are generally exhausted and just want to get past that part of the agenda. That could be done differently if it seems like there's a will for it in the process, which is to start it earlier so that people can think about the key performance measures as they are learning about the agency's work in the presentations that happen early in the process. So that's something that I have raised in my new role as a co-chair, that we should think about where we put this into the process so it will have an impact. And that leads to the third and my final comment is, very often this is, it is part of the budgeting process, and people say it should be tied to the budget. Well, that can go either way. Okay, we're mad at this agency, we're not going to give them any more money. Or this agency is so overworked, they have so much to do, and you have issued some audits that tell us about this, you need to give them lots more money so that they can do something effectively. Otherwise, you will continue to have poor outcomes because you are seriously underfunding this activity. Mm-hmm. So, what does it mean to be tied to the budgeting process? Some people assume it means you punish an agency by not giving them more money, and that's often the opposite thing than what should be done. Or sometimes it just means you need to look at how the money is allocated among different parts of the agency, different types of staffing in different areas of the program. So it's just another caution about being careful what we mean about tying it to the budget process.
Senator Thatcher, did you have a question?
Yeah, well, we all seem to have our ideas about KPMs here. Apparently, some pent up energy on this one. But I was just going to pile on a little bit. In my short lived, frustrating foray into the Ways and Means process, I didn't enjoy that committee at all. But there were my observations of the KPMs at the time. They were kind of new, and so I will say they were kind of in their infancy as far as developing what would be a relevant KPM. But I was thinking, you know, it is important to tie it to the budget process, but that goes back to the mission of the agency. What legislative policies have we put in place? What are we tasking this agency with? And that's the root of it right there. And then what does their stated mission, which I think they all have mission statements now, does the stated mission fit in with that? And then do the KPMs answer to this mission? And I've read KPMs that are talking about how many phone calls an agency got. I'm like, you know, kind of like what Representative Nathan was talking about. Didn't seem real relevant. And, you know, unless maybe it was a subcategory of a customer service, and then, but how many calls you get versus how many calls you, I mean, for example, just didn't seem real relevant to the process. Like, it just kind of pointed to the fact that, yeah, they get a lot of calls and they need a lot of people answering phones. And so, yeah, I guess that kind of answers some questions, but doesn't really answer the questions about whether the agency is meeting their mission, meeting their legislative obligations, meeting the priorities that we as the representative of the people have put in place for that agency. So, my two cents.
Do you want to respond to that?
Co-chairs, yeah, I just have one comment, then I'll defer to my partner here. But yeah, nibbling, exactly what you're all nibbling on, performance measures and outcomes should be an operational thing if there was nothing tied to the budget at all. This is supposed to be the performance data on tied to the mission, mm-hmm. tied to what they're trying to do, trying to what they're, and so it should be strategically being used and measured if there was no external requirement on it. And so that's I think there is sometimes a disconnect that this is just, and they may, agencies may have it, they may not call it that, but I think this is a tool to explicitly focus where it can be used for multiple stakeholders too. So I do think this shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the terminology gets caught up, but this should be something agencies is hardwired. It's what they're talking to their executive team about on their weekly staff meetings.
I concur with the our co-chair Ways and Means that how things rush through. I think we've cleaned them up some extent, but also remember, I think they're important. At that time we developed them and implemented them, that was the end thing, the outcome based and performance measured and all that. And I think it's good for the public to have these, yes, performance measures. So it's not just for us in the Ways and Means, but I think for a public, mm-hmm. to say, hey, they're looking at what they're doing, and we need to continue to work it. But it does get maybe shortchanged in the process, as the co-chair said.
Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. And following up on that, I was looking for some key performance measures, and the only place I knew to look for them was within some of the budget bills that were there, but they're not necessarily there. It would be nice to have them in a central location, maybe on the transparency website.
They're very hard to find. Yeah. For me, they were very hard to find.
They are hard to find. They shouldn't be.
Madam Co-Chair, they actually are on the transparency website,
cool.
Which may be a conversation
yet,
at the next transparency website about how easy it is to find things on.
Well, I was looking on OLIS, so that's where I was.
But, yeah. But my understanding is they are now all on the transparency website.
I think that would be a good thing to put on OLIS for us legislators, because that's kind of our main, you know, go-to as far as information on our legislative day-to-day duties. So,
mm-hmm. Sir, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Co-chairs McLean and Senator Thatcher, I was just going to add that I think the issue about how relevant the measures are to an agency's mission and goals is a key one. Kip mentioned that we look at KPMs when we do our scoping work. It's a way that we try and identify risks or areas where an agency can improve. And I think this is just anecdotal based on my memory of our past work, but I think we do find sometimes that some of those measures are just sort of on autopilot. They're being collected and reported, and they aren't as relevant to the agency as they could be.
Well, I really appreciate the dialogue today, and we'll let Senator Johnson, in case she had another question that she wanted to ask.
I do, okay. And I'm sorry I had to leave. That was one of those ones you got to take.
Yeah.
After listening to Co-Chair Nathanson speak, one other thing occurred to me, and it's not only the timing, but apropos our conversations with Director Koba the other day and about Director Koba today, I think the engagement of DAS and their embrace of the rigor and discipline and significance of performance measures is really important. DAS gives the budget instructions to agencies, and they start quite early. And if the word from DAS comes forth in the budget instructions, the legislature is going to be looking at these key performance measures. They're going to give them more importance. They're going to perhaps be in a different place in the budget cycle. that would probably reinforce the idea that the legislature cares, that this isn't just data we're collecting for the sake of collecting it, that it will be used in budget prep and review of how efficacious an agency is. So there's a role for DAS here.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you for letting me get a last shot in.
I do want to say that I think, you know, I think Senator Thatcher had it right. You can tell, I don't know if it's pent up, but you can tell that I think performance measures do matter to this group of legislators and that we're feeling like there's a place for them because of the role they play for legislators and their work and the role that we have in making sure that the citizens have all the information they need and the transparency they need to make sure that their government is working effectively, efficiently, and productively. And so we want to make that connection with you again as our relationship grows in looking at audits, prioritizing audits, and reviewing audits. So thank you so much, everyone, for the conversation today. I think it was a good conversation, and I think we'll continue to bring them into our future reviews of audits and suggestions that we might make and the connections that we have to all agencies, including DAS. So thank you very much
for being here today.
Thank you. Well, we finished the agenda, and we did it in a fairly decent time. And so there were a few changes, as you may have seen on this agenda and on the next agenda, because we wanted to make sure that all parties for agenda items were able to be here to have a full presentation. And so we'll continue with making sure that we get those changes to you as quickly as we can.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the professional staff's cooperation in doing it. This is a serious committee taking up serious issues, and I don't want people far down the food chain in an agency. I think this is a conversation between the legislature and principals, and I appreciate your guidance in moving us in that direction.
So if there's nothing else for the good of the order, we will adjourn for the day.
Thank you.
Thank you.